Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and bear with me for a second. Let me just get online. All right, here I am at healthcare.gov, and I'm clicking on Apply Online. It says choose your state. Let's go with New Jersey. And lo and behold, create a marketplace account. Holy moly, it's working. But the federal health insurance exchanges aren't working for everyone, and not all the time. In fact, our producer, Jody Evergan, tried the site 6 times yesterday to prepare for this segment and twice this morning and had an exactly 50% success rate. Let's talk about the status of healthcare.gov and the latest on the Affordable Care Act signups in general as the end of November, when President Obama has promised that they'll be working pretty well for most people, approaches. We'll talk about it with Amy Goldstein of The Washington Post. Hi, Amy. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be with you.
And I keep hearing people, I guess including myself, refer to the November 30th deadline, but it's not an official deadline of any kind. So what exactly is the goal for this Saturday, and how squishy is it?
Well, people keep referring to November 30th because that's an expectation that the Obama administration set. Starting in late October, folks within the administration started saying that by the end of this month, meaning November, the website healthcare.gov would be working smoothly for the vast majority of people. And for a long time, we didn't exactly know what that meant, but they kept saying it. And then it turns out that what that means by the administration's internal definition is that the website should be working well enough that 80% of the people who tried to sign up for a health plan on the website should be able to do so. So 80% is what working smoothly for the vast majority of people means.
And do you think they're going to get there? Because honestly, if history 50 years from now is looking back on the rollout of the Affordable Care Act in the United States, and they see that 80% of people were able to sign up after the first 2 months of operation, they're going to say, oh, okay, not bad, even though we're in the middle of all this talk of crises and debacles right now. But is it really going to be 80% on Saturday?
Well, that's a good question. So there are a couple things to think about. First, your point is that the long view may be different than the short view, and whether the long view looks different depends on how quickly things get fixed. So what's that look like? Well, we know a few things. We don't know everything, but we know a few things now. We know that despite the fact that the site has been down a little bit in the last day, it actually has been working a little bit better. And the administration is looking at 2 measurements to figure out whether they're on track to get to that 80%. One has to do with how fast pages load if you're on the website, whether you can get from one page to the next within it. And that's been getting better. And the other measure has to do with how often people get error messages and the thing just crashes for them. And that's also been getting a little bit better. So we don't know whether they're going to get to 80% or not. It's just not clear right now. But we do know that compared to October 1st, the day the website opened for business supposedly, things are getting better. But that doesn't mean it's better for everyone. And what I mean by that is that there are a couple things that have to be working well for the website to really be useful. One is, of course, that people have to be able to sign up for health plans. But there's a second thing that also has to happen, which is that this federal health exchange has to be able to get good information to the health plans that people choose to buy. Because under this law, this is a little technical thing, but it matters a lot. Under this law, it's the health insurers that have to send bills to their new customers. And if they can't send those bills, then people may think they've signed up for a health plan, but they're not insured. So even now, with things getting better on the consumer end, health insurers have been very worried because they are still getting pretty messy results when they should be getting pretty clear information about who their new customers are.
So listeners, have you been trying to sign up for health insurance through healthcare.gov or through one of the state exchanges, such as the one in New York State, which is a state exchange? New Jersey uses the federal exchange. 212-433-WNYC. Let's crowdsource some of the reporting on this. Tell us what your experience has been. We're not going to get a statistical analysis by taking a few phone calls, but we'll get some stories out there and some, you know, qualitative descriptions of what's happening. Maybe you work for an insurance company. How's it going from your end? Maybe you're trying to receive that information about people who are signing up and are or aren't experiencing some of the problems that Amy Goldstein from The Washington Post was just describing. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And before we go to the phone calls, Amy, the administration also announced this week that it's officially extending its deadline to get coverage by January 1st from December 15th to December 23rd. And that sounds like a small deal, but just so people listening have the right dates in their head, you now have to sign up by December 23rd to have your coverage kick in on New Year's. Why did they delay it by that short a period of time? Why bother to do that?
Well, one of the things that folks in the administration are concerned about even now is that if too many people rush to healthcare.gov all at once, it may not work well for folks. So they're hoping that people will sign up gradually. In order to do that, there may be a lot of people who want to sign up for health insurance and who have been waiting until they think the website's working better. So by giving another week, the administration's thinking has run, maybe that will make the pace a little bit more gradual and more people can actually have a smooth experience signing up online. Now, that said, it sounds like not that big a deal to extend for a week, but the insurance industry is a little bit unhappy with this because insurance companies have been saying all along, as this online enrollment system has been developed, that health plans need roughly 2 weeks comfortably so that they can process new applications. Now, if you think about when December 23rd is and when January 1st is, which is when the coverage is supposed to begin for people who've already signed up, just 1 week.
That's right.
Yep.
Higher mathematics.
That's just one week.
And therefore,
it's not clear whether the health plans are going to be able to get everybody done speedily, and that's also falling over the Christmas vacation time, or whether people are going to find by January 1st that, again, they have signed up, but their coverage hasn't begun because the health plans haven't been able to send out bills yet.
Let's hear a few folks' experiences. Our lines are all jammed. So many people are trying to sign up, and let's hear what some of the experiences have been like. Elliot in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elliot.
Good morning. Good to speak to you.
So what'd you do?
I just went on the New York State website a couple of different times for some quite extensive information gathering sessions, and I found plenty of what I was looking for. I want to gather a lot of information before I sign up with the site and start, you know, giving them information and actually purchasing product. I'm swimming in information based on just what they have there and also what they link to. There was one time when it was down for routine maintenance, but it's hard to think of any website that, I mean, my bank website goes down every night for routine maintenance. So,
all right. So a good experience with Obamacare so far as he gathers information. Thank you, Elliot. Nancy in New Jersey in Hunterdon County. Nancy, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Well, I've had a long saga here with healthcare.gov. I was one of the ones who tried on October 1st to log in and create an ID, and of course that didn't happen. And after about 15 tries, I gave up and said, okay, I'll just wait for a while. I'm individually insured. I have a policy right now that is quite expensive. And I have the sort of complicating factor of turning 60 next year. So I went back a few weeks ago, actually a couple of weeks ago, and went to the part of the website where you could just look at plans and look at pricing. And there were a number of plans on there that cost less than the plan I have now, that are with the same company that I have now, which is AmeriHealth New Jersey. So I said, okay, I'll just call AmeriHealth and see what they can do, if I can sign up for one of these, you know, fairly attractive plans through them.
Mm-hmm.
And their representative told me that, well, the prices that were shown for these plans on healthcare.gov are not actually accurate.
Oh, boy.
Right. And that if I wanted to get a plan comparable to the one that I have now, it would be a premium $200 a month higher that I'm paying right now, and the cheapest plan that would be available to me would be still even more expensive than what I'm paying right now. So I guess my question is, are these prices supposed to be accurate, and are they binding on the companies that are putting them up?
Those are great questions. Amy, have you heard of this issue before?
Yeah, sort of, and I don't have perfect knowledge about what's supposed to be up there and the good question about whether these are legally binding. So I think that there are some issues with accuracy. We don't really have a sense as to how prevalent that is yet. But it's interesting, Nancy, what your experience has been. I thought you were going to say something else, which is that the prices on the website don't take into account the fact that most people are going to be eligible for at least some government help or some kind of a government subsidy in paying for that health plan. So the prices might actually be a little bit lower than listed. But it sounds like you had the exact opposite experience.
Yeah, I'm not available for a subsidy. I'm in that gray zone where I don't make enough. I make too much money to qualify for a subsidy, but not enough to afford the plans that apparently are going to be available to me.
The new American donut hole.
So I face 4.5 years of no coverage before I go into Medicare.
Well, good luck, Nancy. I don't know what else to say because I don't know how else we could advise her, Amy, other than to, I don't know. It sounds like she may be better off looking outside the exchanges because people can still do that, right? There is still a private market that exists without going through the Obamacare exchanges, or is that completely abolished?
Well, it's not abolished, but the whole point of the exchange is that it's supposed to be better than the private market for people who buy insurance individually because, I mean, you know, leaving aside all these technical problems, there is a real good rationale for this idea of a health exchange for people who are buying insurance completely individually otherwise.
Right.
Which is that the individual parts of the insurance market have for a long time been the most messed up, most expensive, worst coverage part of the health insurance system in this country. So the exchange is supposed to pool all those people so that the rates would come down, the prices would come down.
And if Nancy is fairly close to Medicare age, as she indicated, then it should definitely be cheaper for her on the exchanges because part of the point is to smooth out the disparities in price by age, even though it's still more expensive the older you get, but only by a certain amount. Whereas if you're out there on the individual market where the community rating, as it's called, doesn't apply, then they can charge you according to your individual risk, and presumably that would be higher. But from what
that's right. I just had – let me just jump in with one more thought.
Yeah.
It's a little dangerous to do raw speculation on the radio, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. So I know that in some cases the prices that are available on that are visible on this website, healthcare.gov, are divided into just a couple different age groups. They're not listed for your specific age and family circumstance. So if you're close to Medicare age, if you're in your late 50s or early 60s, that's going to be a pretty high price age range for insurance. And I'm just wondering if perhaps the prices that are listed don't break out the age groups finely enough to reflect what the real price is for people who are a little bit older.
Interesting. Amy Goldstein covering Obamacare for the Washington Post or the Affordable Care Act, if you prefer. And actually, one of the things I've noticed is that supporters of the act, supporters of the president, who had previously been resigned to calling it Obamacare because the president himself had embraced it after it was first opponents who called it Obamacare solely. Now people are starting to insist, if they support the idea, that you go back to calling it the Affordable Care Act because Obamacare is becoming identified with a smear again. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I actually have noticed that. That's pretty perceptive of you. Folks in the Obama administration have been, for the most part lately, referring to it as the Affordable Care Act.
Let's take another call. Cindy at Union Square. You're on WNYC. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, Brian. Well, this is insane. The insurance companies have had their lobbyists write the laws. It's so obvious. They are raking you over the coals. My boyfriend, who is 63 years old, who's been without insurance because he's unemployed, getting unemployment insurance, which will end. He will start taking his Social Security in January. His estimated Social Security payout for the year is $20,000. And the insurance company, They want $5,000 for the year to be insured. That's with subsidies, that the government's picking up the rest, and then a $2,000 copay before any doctor will see you. So that's $7,000 a year for insurance on a $20,000 salary. How can he eat and pay his rent? Answer that question. We need help.
Amy, why wouldn't the subsidy be better than that if he's really making $20,000?
Well, I don't know everybody's individual circumstances, obviously, but I think that these last two calls have raised a pretty important point, which is that we're not hearing from everybody who's tried to buy insurance through the health exchange. Obviously, some people can't buy it because the website's not working pretty well, but a lot of other people have managed to buy it. And it's going to be a very interesting thing in the months ahead to see whether, not for each individual, but whether on balance, people are finding that their rates are better off or worse off than they expected. That's a really open question because people's experiences are going to differ. They're going to differ depending on their circumstances. They're going to differ in different parts of the country. And after these website issues get fixed, assuming that they, you know, eventually do, there's going to be a longer and deeper question about whether people think that their insurance is good and affordable.
I want to make sure before we run out of time to touch on what seems to be the breakout success story that could be a model for nationwide success of the whole thing, and that's from California, which has a higher percentage of uninsured than the country as a whole, so it's starting from a difficult place. It's processing 10,000 applications a day, I've read, on its state exchange, which puts it on track to meet its targets, and young and healthy people are signing up roughly in the proportion of their existence in the population. So if that's an indication of what happens once the website actually gets up and running, then the whole thing could work. How important is the California experience?
Well, as you say, the California experience is what's supposed to be happening all around the country. And to be fair, California had a little bit of technical trouble when it began October 1st, but it seems to have gotten past that. And an interesting thing is that there are several, you know, around the country, there are now 14 states that are operating their own insurance exchanges and 36 that are relying on the federal exchange. And of those 14, there are some that are doing very poorly. Oregon hasn't managed to sign up a single person yet because it's having so much computer trouble with its separate health exchange. But California, Kentucky, Washington State, there are a few places that really seem to be working pretty well. And whether the rest of the country can eventually emulate them will go a long way determining how well this part of this law is going to work.
So maybe we're seeing America no longer divided into red states and blue states. It's now website loaded versus 404 error states. Does it need to track exactly with the proportion of the population, or can a smaller percentage of the so-called young invincibles than we have still sign up and the system still work financially?
Well, that's a good question. So the issue with the ages of people who sign up is this. For the insurance prices that are being charged at the moment to be able to be stable over time and for people not to have big price increases, there has to be an adequate mix of young people who are pretty healthy and don't ask for much medical care and older people who've just been, you know, uninsured and waiting for a long time for a chance to get health care, health insurance, so they can get the health care that in some cases they've needed for a while. So that balance really has to work right. And, you know, there's no one number that's this is perfect or this is, you know, the whole thing's going to fall apart. But the age mix has to be pretty good. And it's not that if it's not good, people can't buy insurance. It's just that insurance is going to become more expensive for a lot of people over time if there aren't enough young, healthy people.
Patrick in Windsor Terrace, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How was your Obamacare experience?
Last week I went on the New York Exchange, and it ran smoothly, and I saved $200 from our private plan from last year. And we're using a not-for-profit insurance company now, which I feel very good about.
And so you had a smooth experience on the New York Exchange, and you saved a little money from your old plan?
Saved $200 a month, yeah.
All right. That's good. And I should say, Amy Goldstein from The Washington Post, that most of the comments that we're getting on our comments page, as well as these calls that we've been taking from people in New York, are saying that this is working pretty well for them. Now, again, this is not a scientific sample, so it could be that people are wanting to call up and support it, and that's what we're seeing. But we are getting, you know, a fair amount of positive feedback from New York, and less so from New Jersey, which is using healthcare.gov. Before you go,
Let me just jump in, because that was actually the point I was going to make, that New York is relying on its own insurance exchange. So that may be, you know, as you say, people may have, you know, reasons that they want to convey certain kinds of experiences and create those impressions publicly about how things are working. But it is a true fact that New Yorkers are not relying on the federal system, healthcare.gov.
And I want to get one bit of background before you go, because you, along with your colleague, Juliet Alperin, have done some really remarkable reporting on what exactly went wrong with the healthcare.gov website. And my sense is that you landed on the idea that it was really CGI Federal, which is a private contractor, that dropped the ball and even outright misled the federal government about their status. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. So there's no one reason why this website hasn't been working so well, and it's not all this company's fault. I mean, certainly we've looked back at what's happened over the last few years as the government was coming up with the policies and some of the government regulations that were needed for people building the website to know how to do it. So there were delays in some of those government decisions. There's the fact that there is nobody within the Department of Health and Human Services of the federal government who has the full-time job of watching how the website's being built. So there have been, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. But with respect to this company, CGI Federal Incorporated is the main contractor to build the website. There are about four dozen companies that have worked on it, but CGI Federal is the main one. And what we found out was that in late August, as people within some of the federal health officials who were working on the, overseeing the work on the website were getting pretty anxious about how this company's work was going, they pulled in more than a dozen people, managers from CGI, and had a two-day meeting in which they asked people to go from this company to go point by point by point over every single part of the website they were responsible for building.
And how close to October 1st was that?
This was August 22nd and 23rd, so okay. It was about 5-6 weeks out.
Yep.
And the company presented 15 pages of spreadsheets going over every part of the website that they were responsible for, and they made predictions as to their confidence level that that particular piece would be ready in time. They rated it either high, medium, or low. And it turns out that by October 1st, the day that the Federal Health Exchange opened, most of the components that that company had rated high confidence that it would be working just several weeks earlier, in fact, weren't yet working well.
And there you have it, folks, from Amy Goldstein, who's on the Affordable Care Act beat for The Washington Post. As the end of the month closes in, Saturday is November 30th, when President Obama and his team have promised Americans that for the vast majority of people, they will be able to sign up for Affordable Care Act policies on the federal exchange without much problem. And so Amy Sarah on our website suggests they should promote the new improved site with a Cyber Monday sale.
We'll see how it all goes.
Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and still to come today, poet Billy Collins. He'll read off the back of a Metro card. And also poems about centrifuges and all kinds of things. The FDA is warning people about the popular new practice of personal genetic testing. They're concerned that people are using their results to make bad medical decisions. We'll talk about that. And how to protect your iPhone from holiday season theft on the streets of New York, other than pretending it's a BlackBerry. We'll talk about that. All coming up after the latest news with Richard Haake. Hi, Richard. What's happening?